All right, so I'm recording right now, and I put it right here. So it's a pretty reasonable quality recording because I'm right here, and it has automatic gain control, so it adjusts for my voice nice and easily. Some students like to ask a lot of questions, and they don't want their voice on the Internet because this is going to go up to the Internet. If you click on this link, where is that link at? Lecture recordings. Here's a link to where I put it. All right, it's just my personal website. It's not a Blackboard website. Some people don't, and that's open access, right? Some people don't want their voice on the Internet for security reasons or confidentiality reasons. If you don't want me to record lectures so that you can have a nice conversation with me during lecture, then this first week of school, you need to give me a letter saying that you don't want me to record lectures and put it online. Okay, that has never happened, but of course I have to offer that, right? If I'm talking, if this microphone is calibrated to my voice right here, when somebody speaks in the crowd way back over there, the microphone hardly ever picks it up, ever. All right, at least to find out who it is by voice. All right, so if nobody sends me a letter, then next week I'll start putting these, I'll upload these lectures online for you. Okay. Along those confidentiality thoughts, in lab, it's okay for you to take pictures of specimens, take videos of specimens, could be models of bones or eyeballs or whatever, but never take a picture or a video of another student without written permission. And the same thing for the instructor, right? You can record my voice. You're welcome to record my voice right here. Probably won't be as good as this recording, but you can't. Sometimes, like I said, I forget to turn it on. Remind me if I forget to turn it on. You can record audio, but you can't record video, and you can't take a still photo without written permission, okay? Because this is not like being out on the sidewalk someplace. Okay, anybody have a question? Question? Yes, I knew there was a question.
Do we have an SI leader?
I haven't learned if there's an SI leader for this class yet, okay? Does anybody know? Is anybody here for SI? I do have a button for supplemental instruction. Our SI leader from last semester, Christina Speck, is no longer with us. So I'll try to find out who that is. Supplemental instruction is usually maybe an hour, hour and a half in another room someplace, and they use different kind of strategies to review information. There's more group and collaborative work, okay, which sort of sounds more like lab, but you don't have lab models per se, but it's a little bit different way, which is helpful for learning new information. I'll see if there is an SI leader for this class. Okay. If I don't have an SI leader, you might think about becoming an SI leader for this class next semester because it is paid. And somebody told me how much they earn every week, which I thought was okay for the amount of time that you put in. Too bad I forgot what it was. I have it written down someplace. Who knows where I have that note, though. Okay, so let's start. Anybody have a question on Blackboard? Make sure you can absolutely log into Blackboard this week. Otherwise, you're going to be behind in the class and never get behind in this class. All right, so I'll leave Blackboard open. Lecture notes, introduction. I think I gave them to you in a Word file, which means that if you come to class with a laptop or a pad or something, you can modify these, you can edit that file right in class, as long as you don't disturb students around you. I remember one time when I was working for a big company, somebody had a laptop taking notes all the time, and he would pound the keyboard, and the pounding of the keyboard would just resonate in the whole room. So if you're a pounder, then I can't let you use it, or sit maybe way in the back. You know, right? Just try to use it quietly, but you're welcome to do that. Yeah. Pre-lecture reading assignment. Let me go back to Blackboard. Okay, pre-lecture reading assignments. Okay, it would be good for me to mention this now because I have to mention it sometime. Here are the pre-lecture reading assignments. I clicked on it, and they are all there. Now, you don't see them all because I put dates when they become available. Oh, no, all of them are available. Sorry, they're all available. Okay, but you might want to know that I answer that question correctly. And then there might be shades of gray of how to answer something correctly. So what I've done is given you my answer key. So here's the answer keys to those pre-lecture reading assignments. So I'll click in here. Now these only become available after the lecture because I want you to look at the stuff before lecture. These are easy to do. They won't help you very much for a lecture exam, but they'll help you understand things quickly for a lecture. So if you're doing these the night before an exam, it's not going to do much good. You do it the night before a lecture, it's really good. Right? So try not to get behind with those. So what do I have here? Keys. Here are all the keys, but they become available after the lecture. Like here's one September 11th, here's the 16th, there's the 23rd. All right, so they'll all become available way before the test, lecture test.
Did you collect them?
Nope, I don't collect them or grade them. It's just for your benefit so that you know sort of what I'm talking about before you come to class. And I know it seems like a little bit more extra work, but if I don't have them, after students have done a couple, I get suggestions like I should do more of them. Okay, I wouldn't really say complaints, but they're sort of like complaints. So you'll find them helpful, I'm sure. Okay. Yeah, I can put those on maybe even a lab quiz sometimes if it relates to lab. And lab is supposed to support what we do here in lecture or the lecture exam. Maybe even sometimes on an online quiz too. Yeah, so have it handy. Online quizzes are open notes, open books. All right, so get all your materials ready to go. And if the answer doesn't come to mind right away, look it up, and you're not under any kind of time penalty. Okay? Yeah.
Did you say online or
in class? Online. Online quizzes are open book, open notes. Lecture exams are closed books, closed notes, no electronic devices on. That's in the syllabus. Yep. Online quizzes, it will automatically kick you out after 4 hours. Okay, but basically there's no time limit because after 4 hours you can go back in. And that's only for bookkeeping purposes that I keep it at 4 hours, just so that we don't have a bunch of open quizzes in Blackboard. Blackboard doesn't know what to do with open quizzes, so I just shut everybody's quiz off after 4 hours. If you need more time than that, I could bump it up to 4 hours and 55 minutes, I think. Okay, question. In lab we don't, and you won't want to drink or eat anything in lab once you see what we do in there. Okay, but some people have stronger stomachs than others. But typically in lab, not even water, but you can step outside. It's pretty open lab. Sometimes we work with equipment that I don't want soda pop on. Where that's real important is in physiology, because you'll work with computers in there, and if you get soda pop in a keyboard, then the computer's worthless, right? So basically, don't. In lecture, it might be disturbing to other people, so maybe you could have some water in a closed container, but I wouldn't bring in a pizza, and not enough for everybody. Okay? Yeah. We're dissecting brains, eyeballs, hearts, and fetal pig. I think that's everything. Yeah, fetal pig, not cat. And that is compulsory. You do have to participate in that. I can't give you a final grade without that. You might have some objections to that, ethical objections or other kinds of objections which are valid, and I'm not going to critique them one way or the other. Those are maybe very good reasons, but you still can't pass the class without doing it. Okay. If you are pregnant, you should consult with your physician to find out if that's going to affect your pregnancy one way or the other. Okay, or affect your fetus or your infant. Okay, it's beyond what I can say to you. So that's just something to consider. For guys, you could ask your physician too, but I don't know what the connection might be. Okay, I don't want to leave you out. Okay, so that's for dissections. Okay, the harmful chemical that we run into sometimes is formaldehyde at very low concentration, very low. Yeah. Okay, any other questions? No. Okay, so I could download right here. Now, when I download, how do you guys like to download? I like to right-click and then save target as or save link as, depending on what operating system, browser you have. Save it to your hard drive. If you just click on it, left-click, it will open it up and put it in a window, right? But if you save it on your hard drive, that's great because then you don't have to have internet access anymore to look at that file, right? So save target as, and it's going to ask you where do you want to put it. Make a nice Bio 231 folder someplace, and then put, label it somehow that makes sense for you, right? Okay, so I don't need to do that because we have it someplace already. Okay, I'm going to mouse around just a little bit. If anybody else has a question, let me know. These are all the things that you can download. Now, I want to see some figures. Ah, okay. Beginning to remember what the organization is here on the hard drive. Okay, so here are a bunch of figures that are in your textbook. And these figures, when I click on them, I like to pop up on that screen. And then on this screen over here, I like to put the Word file, show both of them at the same time. That's how I like to do it. If it's really confusing, I can show one slide on both monitors, but usually this is how I like to do it. People in the front row, it's a little extreme, probably. People in the back row, it's maybe a little bit hard to see. So try to get here early and get to a place in the room that makes it easy to look at these figures, okay? All right. Okay, so I think we're ready to begin. Something about anatomy. And your book maybe doesn't mention this, but I need to mention this. You're on a track of classes in health science where you're going to take anatomy class, you're going to take a physiology class and a micro class, so kind of the three core courses. And physiology has a prerequisite of anatomy for it. And I think it would be helpful for you to know what anatomy means, especially compared to physiology. You should know what those two terms mean, what is their relationship, and why are they different, and why are they the same? Okay. So anatomy is the study of the structure of something, and since this is a human anatomy class, it's going to be the structure of the human body. It might be the structure of, like fetal pig, for instance, but you can relate that to your own body. We're going to do a pig heart, cow eye, but mostly human anatomy. Okay, it's just a study of structure. That's what anatomy is. And physiology is the study of how those pieces work together to perform some kind of function. You know why? In anatomy, you learn about the retina and the sclera, parts of the eye, your iris, right? In physiology, you actually learn how those structures produce an image in your brain, right? A little bit different thing. And anatomy is fundamental to physiology. There's really no way you can understand physiology without knowing what the pieces are that make up your body. Right, so that's why you have to study anatomy first and then physiology at a later time, because then it will make sense. Good, that's still on. And so we're going to do the same thing in lab. We're going to use microscopes today in lab and this whole week in lab. So what do you think is the best way to learn a microscope? Should you just start using it or should you learn the pieces first? Yeah, learn the anatomy of a microscope first. Right, so that we can talk about the pieces and that will make learning how to use it or the physiology of a microscope a lot easier. Right, so anatomy is structure, physiology is the function. Unless somebody has a question, I'm going to move on. Branches of anatomy. There's a lot of different kinds of disciplines in anatomy. There is gross anatomy, which is mostly what we focus on in this particular class. Gross means big. Right, it's like 12 times 12. It's a really big number. Gross anatomy is the kind of anatomy you can see with your naked eye. Whether it's on your surface or deep inside your body, if you can look at it with your naked eye, that's gross anatomy. It doesn't mean disgusting, it just means it's big. Right? That's one kind. Microscopic anatomy, of course, is the other end of the spectrum. It means that these are things that you can't see with your naked eye. And what do you need to see these things? They're there, you just can't see them until you look at them through a microscope, right? And so we do some of that in here. The first part of this class. And then there's developmental anatomy. Developmental anatomy is a study of how your body changes from when you're born until when you die. And your body does change. Like maybe you set your grandpa down and you're going to talk to him about hip joint, elbow joint, eyeball, brain, or something like that. And you notice, gee whiz, grandpa, your nose is bigger now than it was last year. Gee whiz, Grandpa, your ears, notice your ears bigger? Let's talk about that ear. And then we're going to talk about the external auditory meatus and all that kind of stuff. But then that's true. Our ears and noses keep growing our whole life. right? So that's what developmental anatomy is. It's something you're not born with. It's something that just changes over time. Embryology is change over time, but that's before you're born. Embryology is how a fetus or something that comes before a fetus develops, right? So that's sort of like developmental anatomy, but that's before you're born. Surface anatomy we'll talk about maybe a little bit because it's really handy, not focus too much attention on it. But for instance, we might look at this part of your face right here, very prominent feature on people's face, and we might learn what bone is underneath this, right? The cheekbone right here is called a zygomatic bone. All right, then we're going to learn where your ribs are, because if you know where your ribs are, you know where your heart is, which might be important for you to know sometime. This part of your body you bang all the time, this point right here, right? That's the olecranon process on an ulna. So that will just help you tie things together. Not terribly important for this class. Another kind of anatomy, which is very sophisticated, which we don't do in here, but you might want to do sometime, is what we call cross-sectional anatomy, where we just draw a line across somebody's body and then we are able to identify everything that's in that cross-section. Okay. Of course, that's very important. For instance, if you're going to track a gunshot wound or arrow wound or something, you need to know anatomy at that level, but not in this class. All right. What we're going to do, mostly in this class, is study anatomy by organ system. We're going to break your whole body down into those pieces and learn something about the cardiovascular system, learn something about your skin system. We call that integument. Right? Blood vessels, muscles, bones, all those chapters are broken down into their own sections. Okay. Well, that seems pretty complicated, and it is. So you might wonder, how is it that, what's the best way to understand something that's complicated? Like your finances for something. Right? You get a paycheck. How do you analyze what's going on with that paycheck? You break it down into smaller pieces, right? So you figure out how much you got to pay for rent, how much for gasoline, how much for insurance, how much for food, cigarettes, beer, pool. Can't forget pool, okay? All those different things, right? So you analyze all of those things and then you add it all together and then you have a good understanding of what's happening with your finances. The same thing for your body. We're going to break it down into pieces and then we're going to add these things together so that you have a really good understanding. And we're not going to start with big pieces, we're going to start with small pieces. That's a good place to start because the small pieces are the building blocks for what? The bigger pieces. So we're going to look at these seven levels of structural and functional organization. Every book talks about it a little bit differently. All right, but the smallest thing that we're going to talk about in here are some chemicals. Right, adenosine triphosphate might be somebody's favorite chemical. Collagen might be somebody else's favorite molecule. Some people might be really concerned about cholesterol. And then other people will say, well, gee whiz, none of this will ever make sense unless we understand something about H2O, which is what?
Water.
That makes up over 90% of your body. Okay. Adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, that's the energy molecule in your body. That's what keeps you alive, allows you to do work. All right, so that's a very important molecule. So if you know something about these chemicals, we can add these chemicals together and we can start to make a structure of something that we call an organelle. These are things that are very small, that are contained within a cell. Haven't talked about a cell yet, but I need to just say it. A cell is the basic unit of life and it's made up of organelles. For instance, a nucleus is a part of a cell. Rough endoplasmic reticulum, Golgi body. We're going to learn about those, not in the first chapter, maybe in the second or fourth chapter, something like that. Okay. So if we put a bunch of chemicals together, we can get an organelle, right? And if we put all these organelles together, what do we get? We get a cell. Okay. And the cell is the basic living unit of all life. If you're wondering if something is alive or not, right? It has to be made up of cells, which have all of these things that I've listed for you. Okay, and if it doesn't contain those things, then it's not alive. What is interesting here is a virus. Okay, a virus has genetic material or something that's very much like a nucleus, but it doesn't have any of these other organelles. It doesn't have a plasma membrane, right? Doesn't have a nucleus, right? Doesn't have a cell membrane. So if it doesn't have all these different pieces, these different organelles, is it a cell? The answer is, it's not a cell if it doesn't have these organelles. And if it's not a cell, is it alive? A virus is not alive. It's just a particle that can operate in our bodies, our cells that are alive. That's why viral infections are so difficult to treat, because if it's not alive, how can you kill something that's not alive? You can't, right? You have to think of other kinds of ways of treating that particular disease process. All right, so that's why cells are so important. If we put a bunch of cells together, we get a tissue. All right, so here on this figure, we can see, well, we're not going to start with atoms in this class. In physiology, we start with atoms, but here we got molecules. Molecules put together to make an organelle, and then we put a whole bunch of organelles together to get a cell. And a cell performs a certain kind of function. This one right here is for contraction. What kind of cells in your body are made for contraction? Yeah, muscle in particular, right? If we put a bunch of muscle cells together, then we get an organ. So here is a muscle organ, like the biceps brachii, for instance. It's a group of cells all performing the same kind of function. Okay. Oh, I skipped something. A tissue. Yeah, I skipped tissue. Okay. If we put a bunch of cells together, like for instance this smooth muscle cell, I see only smooth muscle cells right here. Right? And if it only contains these kinds of cells, we call that a tissue. So a tissue is made up of all the same kind of cells, but also all the junk in between the cells has to be the same as well. That's a tissue. Right? And we're going to look at that in lab extensively next week and in this class as well. So if you point to some part of your body, I could tell you what tissue it is, just like that, because there's only four kinds that your whole body is made of, which is really nice. Right? And here are the four kinds. Well, we talked about muscle for contraction, nervous system for conducting information long distances very rapidly in your body. Connective tissue is actually just what it does. It connects different parts of your body together so your skin doesn't fall off your body, or so that a muscle doesn't pull away from a bone, for instance. It has connective tissue. And then epithelium is the fourth kind. Epithelium covers things. It covers surfaces or lines cavities. And can you think of anything that covers a surface on you? Yeah, skin. Yeah, so the skin has epithelium on there. So we'll look at that. All right, and if we put a couple of these different kinds of tissues together, then that's where we get an organ. Okay, so here is a blood vessel. Okay, and that is an organ because it has a lining, which is epithelium. It will have muscles right here. That's another kind of tissue. So there's two different kinds of tissues right there, which means it is an organ, right? Okay, and what's the building block of an organ? A tissue. Yeah, what's the building block of a tissue? A cell. Yeah, so make sure you can go up and down that these different hierarchical levels of organization. And of course, if we put a bunch of organs together, like a heart and blood vessels, what do we get? A system. It's a group of organs all performing the same kind of function. Right, so that's an organ system. Like here I see the cardiovascular system on this diagram. And then if we put all the organ systems together, what do we get? We get you. Right? So we're going to start with the small stuff, and then we're going to look at all the different kinds of organ systems, and then you'll have a pretty good idea of how you're put together. Here are some of the organ systems that we're going to look at. Different textbooks organize these things a little bit differently, but let's look at some pictures. Some of these things you probably know a lot about, and maybe you don't know the proper terminology. Here is the largest organ system in your body. And it is what? It is, and you'll get zero credit for that answer, because what I want you to know is what? Integumentary system. Okay, that's the clinical, medical, scientific term for your skin. Skin is right, right? But integumentary system, okay, is what we're going to call it in here. And it's made of skin, but it's also made of some other things like hair, nails, and some glands, right, are also part of the integumentary system. That's the largest one. All right, so I might ask you something about these organ systems on a lecture exam. Here's another one. I see a hip bone and a femur, some vertebrae, some ribs. What kind of system is this?
Skeletal
system. Okay. So on an exam, let me look at one more. What's the next one? Oh, I see some muscles. Here's pectoralis, right? Here's latissimus dorsi, some other muscles, like abdominal muscles. What system is this? Yeah, muscular system. So on an exam, what do you think I would put on there? Nervous system, muscular system, skeletal system, or integumentary? Probably integumentary, right? Because that demonstrates that you've learned some interesting terminology in here. Everybody before taking this class knows what H2O is, or what muscles are, what bones are, that kind of thing. All right, so I'll probably test on things that you actually have to apply yourself to know about. And integumentary, it would be one of those things. Okay? Okay, what else? How else could we break this course down into? Nervous system, brain, spinal cord, peripheral nerves. I see it right here. Endocrine system. Okay, sort of like a nervous system, but they're not all connected together. Endocrine glands are not all connected together. They communicate with each other and with other parts of the body to control the body, but the signals that they send travel relatively slowly. They are sent by chemical messengers called hormones. Right? Those hormones take time to get from one part of the body to the other, and then it takes some more time to change whatever that target tissue in the body to change what it's doing. So it takes time for an endocrine system to have an effect. Right, so, but you might be wondering, well, why not just do everything with the nervous system, which is very fast? Right? If you want to control something in your body, you send electrical information to it and you can control it very fast, as opposed to endocrine system, which takes time. And the answer to that is, when something has a very fast onset, the duration is very short. Right? If something is controlled, we see this all the time with drugs and other kinds of things. Right? If a drug acts very rapidly, then its action inside the body is very short-lived. But if it takes time for its action to develop, then it will last for a long period of time. It will control whatever it is. And you can look up a bunch of barbiturates and see which ones are fast-acting. It means they'll have an effect only for a short period of time. Which ones take a long time to have an effect, but they'll last a lot longer inside somebody. All right, so that's the reason for the endocrine system. It's for long-term control. Nervous system is for short-term control. All right, endocrine system. We're going to look at all these. Cardiovascular system, heart, blood vessels. We'll learn a little bit about blood, learn a lot about the heart. Another thing that's complementary to the cardiovascular system is the lymphatic system. It contains fluid, right, which is very similar to blood, okay, but it doesn't have red blood cells, so it's not red in color, right, but it contains fluid and returns that fluid back to the cardiovascular system. But another important feature is that it has organs that are important for fighting infection. So immune response is probably one of a couple of very important systems for the lymphatic system. We'll look at that. Respiratory system, lung, okay, things that are in your throat, like your trachea, even part of some stuff that's in your head, like nasal cavity, right, and these other chambers right here. Respiratory system, what do we got here? Stomach, large intestine, small intestine, digestive system, all right, and urinary system, not a very large system, very important. We'll spend some time looking at the urinary system. Even though it doesn't have a lot of gross structures, it's super important in your body. And then lastly, this is the reason why people don't drop the class, because they want to get to the very end. It is the diversification system. Some books are confused and call it the reproductive system. But anyway, we'll go over that. Okay. All right, so those are some of the systems you should know, maybe some organs that make up those different systems, okay, but not too much detail, because that's the whole plan for this class, to know a lot of detail. All right, so let's move on. Anatomic position. Anatomic position is an important concept because we want to be able to describe how to get from one part of your body to another. Right? We also want to be able to describe where something is with respect to another part of your body, like what lies next to it. And there's different ways you can be next to, you could be on top of something, you could be below something, you could be to the right or left, in front or in back. And so we need a standard configuration of a human body. And the standard configuration or anatomic position is just like what I see right here. And that is feet on the ground, facing forward like this, arms down by the side, you know, not like that. That's not anatomic position. Things change around because put your arms down on your side like that, but not relaxed, because when you're relaxed, which way do your palms face? They face behind you, right? We're going to see that we call that posterior. Anatomic position is with your palms facing forward or anterior, so that your thumbs are pointing out to the side. That's anatomic position. You don't relax that way, but that's actually a simpler position to be in, because otherwise some bones are crossing over each other. This way everything's nice and straight up and down. Okay, so that's anatomic position. So if you want to go from one part of your body, you know exactly, right? If you're like this, well, my thumb is pointing to the inside. If you're like that, then your thumb is pointing to the outside. That's confusing. So we always got to start with anatomic position. Okay, let's talk about some directional terms. I'm going to skip through these things right here. And I don't have any directional terms. Okay. All right, so I'm just going to talk about these things. Directional terms. Oh, maybe I have them someplace. Directional terms. Yeah, okay. I don't see a good slide right at the moment. All right, so directional terms. The front of your body in anatomic position is what we call anterior. All right, so this is anterior. Toward the back is posterior. Usually when we use these terms, we think of two structures and say, what's the relationship between these two structures? We just don't say your tongue is posterior. Right? It's what compared to something else? Right? It is posterior to your nose, but it's anterior compared to the back of your head. That's why we always want to use two things. All right, so something in the front is anterior. I'm going to use that term instead of front from now on, and posterior is the back. There are a couple sister terms to anterior and posterior that sometimes we use interchangeably, especially in lab, and that is ventral and dorsal. Ventral in a human is the same thing as anterior, and posterior is the same thing as dorsal, at least in the human, because we're bipedal organisms. For four-legged animals, that changes around a little bit, and I can maybe mention that in lab, make a drawing in lab to see it. They're not exactly the same, but for people they are. Superior and inferior. In anatomic position, if something is above another organ, we say it is superior. Doesn't mean it's more important, it just means it's on top of something. Inferior means what? The opposite. It's underneath something. Like the inferior labium is which lip? Lower lip. Superior labrum, upper lip. Right? Okay. An eyelid is a palpebra, superior palpebra, inferior palpebra. Okay, that's how we would use this. Cranial and caudal, don't use too much in here, but they might be useful. Cranial means toward your brain, toward your head. Sort of could be thought of as superior, but not quite, but toward your brain. Caudal is toward your tail. Now, you know that's not really too descriptive in people because we don't have a tail. But sort of down in that direction would be caudal and cranial toward the head. You'll see maybe a couple circumstances where we use that. Medial and lateral, these are easy to understand. Think of some center line in your body going right down your nasal septum between your two front teeth, right through the middle of your belly button. That's your midline right there. Okay. If something is close to midline, it is medial compared to something that's farther away from it. Okay. So let's consider my belly button compared to my elbow. And where do I have to be? Anatomic position, right? I can't be like this, can't be lying down. Anatomic position. How would you describe where my belly button is in terms of medial and lateral compared to my elbow? My belly button is medial compared to my elbow. Okay, just like that. Elbow is what? Lateral. What about in anatomic position, my thumb compared to my little finger? My thumb is? Lateral, definitely lateral. Okay, my little finger is medial. It's not medial compared to my belly button, but at least those two structures it is. All right, here's the most difficult one to appreciate, at least right off the bat, proximal and distal. And remember, I had a picture of the cardiovascular system. Okay, where's that cardiovascular system at? Right here, cardiovascular system. Here we have a bunch of tubes running around in the body. There are some tubes that are very close to midline, and there are some tubes that are fairly far away from midline. But more importantly, here is the heart. That's the center object. That's our center location. Right? So a blood vessel that's close to the heart, we say that is proximal, and a part of that same blood vessel that's farther away from the heart, we call that distal. Right? So think of some center location in your body, depending on the system we're talking about. Something that's close to the origin of that system, like in this case the heart, will be proximal. Something that's far away is distal. A lot of times we will take a patient's pulse by feeling their radial artery right here. Now, is that a proximal pulse or distal pulse. And probably some of you already memorized it as a distal pulse without even knowing why they call it a distal pulse, because it's what? Far away from your heart. You have another distal pulse, right, in your ankle. More proximal would be what? Like in the carotid artery in your neck. Okay, so that's what we mean by proximal and distal. And in order to use those terms, let's practice a little bit. How would you describe your elbow compared to your shoulder? Because they're connected together. Your elbow is what? Is distal compared to your shoulder, because they are connected. So you want to use these terms in things that are connected to each other in some form or another. Okay? Like I wouldn't say the belly button is distal compared to my stomach. That doesn't really make sense because they're not really connected to each other. Yeah. Next slide.
No, like on the other side, if you scroll down, it's one of the last images, I think.
Oh, okay. Take a look. I see some. I see some planes right here. I'm gonna.
Three, I think.
Yeah, these right here.
No, the last.
Oh, they turned it into tables in this book. They took the pictures. They microscoped the pictures on you. Well, you don't really need a microscope, but almost. Okay. So we talked about, thank you, here's anterior, here's posterior, right, more in this direction. Superior, more toward the head, inferior, more down toward your feet. Okay, and remember, anterior and ventral are the same, posterior and dorsal are the same. Who knows what time we quit in here? Oh, 12 o'clock? 12:05. So it's time, basically. All right, so I'm going to continue on. Usually in lecture, I'm going to pass around a sign-in sheet, but it's way too late to do that because it'll probably take like a half hour to pass it around. But from now on, I'm going to put a sign-in sheet. We'll pass it around in class. That is your receipt that you were in class. Okay, so that if I drop you for not being in class, and you can say, well, I was in class all these days. Why did you drop me? And I don't know. I have to figure out what I'm going to do then. Okay, so you sign the sign-in sheet in lab and in lecture as well. And we got a lab coming up, so if you want to add the class, now's a good time. Meet me outside 335, but I'm going to have a little lunch, so I'll be about 10 or 15 minutes before I get there. Starting next week. Usually I get to it by Friday. Yeah, yeah. I don't even have the web page built yet for where I'm going to put them. Yeah. At lab. Yeah. Lab. Unless you want to do today's lab in the afternoon. Yeah, okay. I know work always puts a crimp in my lifestyle too. So lab. So tomorrow's Wednesday 7:30 or in the afternoon on Wednesday. Yeah. It doesn't transfer to a different section. It's just for one section.
Okay.
You have to go to lab. Go to lab right at the very, right before lab starts is when I take roll call and I add students. So in lecture I can't add because I don't know if there's room in lab. Right now I would like to add students, but I don't know if there's room in lab to add you. So I have to add you from lab. And I have a lab this afternoon sometime.
So we have to, like if you're in the lecture, we have to have lab.
Anything, anytime you get into lab, automatically you get here. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's where I have fewer seats. So that's where I can get students in.
If we're trying to get into this class here, you can go to this last right after this or the Wednesday one.
And I added some students at the 7:30 class this morning, 7:30 lab this morning, but that's already passed.
But you go by the wait list, correct?
First, right. If there are no people that show up on the wait list, then I go to people that just show up. I hold a lottery.
Is there any
For Monday 7:30? No, that's closed.
But let's say worst case scenario was everybody shows up for the last 24 students or whatever you have.
No ads.
Do you guys have extra?
No, they're maxed out.
So people have to like not show up in order to add.
Yeah, they have
to
be no show. So the only day legally I can drop somebody is the very first day.
Okay.
But yeah, for class, any class. So it's so important to go to the first class any class, because instructors should drop students as a no-show.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
I know you've been doing this for years.
Yeah.
I'm in number two position for the 101.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. That's real close. That's real close.
Yeah, I guess. But
depends on who shows up.
Is it left classes for this afternoon or morning?
Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday morning and...
Wednesday afternoon.
So we just need one lab class?
7:30.
We just need one lab class?
Just one. Lab meets once a week.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, once a week.
Oh.
Hi.
What are the things in your house?
Yeah. Yeah?
Any lab.
I have a lab on Wednesday, 7:30, and another lab in the afternoon. I don't know that. No, I don't remember the time. But I have one this afternoon too. Yeah, Mondays and Wednesdays are the same schedule. Different classes, but same schedule.
So if we're on the waiting list, what other lab shows on our schedule is the one we attend?
That's your best chance of getting in.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are
So we just go to the lab that's on our schedule.
Yeah. Are you registered or waitlist?
Registered.
Oh yeah, definitely go to that class.
Like there was one today as well.
Depends on which one you're ready. There's four different classes.
Labs
meet only once a week.
Wednesday.
Yeah, go to that one on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good you double check.
So what if you get into the lecture, but then you can't get into lab?
Can't get into lecture without getting into lab.
Okay. Does one just like use it to practice?
Yes, there are nice interactive exercises in there. Maybe drag and drop. Yeah.
If I'm number five, then I'll get in.
It'd be better to be two.
Okay.
But it's possible. I had, on the wait list, I had to go down, number five on the wait list? I had to go down to probably person number six on the wait list before I added, because 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 didn't show up.
Oh.
So, it's possible. Okay. It's not that I'll add five students, but by the time I get down to that position on the list, that looks a lot better. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's different. Yeah.
What's the maximum number you can have in a lab?
25.
And there's 25 seats for the...
Nope. I don't have... I got 24 seats. So somebody is like an orphan someplace for a little while.
Even if you're on the waiting list, of luck.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
What time is your afternoon?
Oh, I don't know what time it is. It's weird. It's like, what? It's maybe 12:50, maybe? I don't know. I don't know when it is. I don't know when it... I don't have... Yeah.
For the actual, you're not going to give out any actual.
Only in lab.
Only in lab.
Lab. If I have a spot... Yeah, if I have... it's about in 30 minutes. Maybe 12:40. Maybe 12:40. 12:30, something like that. Just go up there and wait. Okay. 335. Yeah, 335. Yeah. Yeah. So I have to add from lab. I can't add from lecture because I don't know if there's a spot in lab.
So we get into lab.
Yeah, you're here for sure. If you get in lab, you're automatically in lecture. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's lab, what, today and tomorrow?
Wednesday. Or? Monday, Wednesday. 7:30, and then in the afternoon, like around 12:30.
Wednesday.
Monday and Wednesday.
Okay.
So I have one more lab today, two on Wednesday, yes, where I would add.
Okay.
Yeah.
Question. Did you send your email out to the waitlist students?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Yeah. I don't think so. Hmm. Yeah. I think it only goes to the registered students.
Okay, then.
Yeah.
See you in lab then.
Sounds good. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I have all that information in hard copy.
Okay.
If I have an ad code for you, then I have the welcome letter and every syllabus and everything
okay,
in hard copy.
Okay, so
I'll
be in lab?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll see you there.
Yeah, really good.
What time is lab?
I'm not really sure. 12:30 maybe?
Psalm number 12.
There's a chance. Yeah. I don't know how good a chance. I think the chance maybe would be better if it was a 7:30 a.m. compared to afternoon, because it's harder for...
So Wednesday, when? You said there's one for...
Yeah, but you're not on a wait list for that one. You're on the wait list for only one lab. So the lab you're on the wait list for is best. That's your best chance.
It's Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Wednesday afternoon.
Okay. Make sure you go to that one. But you could go to any to try to add. But you're not on the wait list for the others. So I have to go through the whole wait list first before getting...
I'll come in Wednesday.
Okay.
Do you have the wait list?
Oh, thank you, then.
Okay, so you... No, I don't.
Because
Because I was number one. But
yeah.
Like she said, like my friend, she said she moved up, but I never moved. Like it always said I was number one.
Okay. Registration is frozen at a certain point. I don't know if it was Friday or Saturday or last night or whatever. So, yeah, if somebody drops, that will show on the record, but the computer's not fast enough to send you an email to say register because registration is frozen.
So then you'll know Wednesday?
Is that your lab that
you
were scheduled for?
Yeah, 'cause I've been, like, number one.
You know, if you want to, I have them upstairs in lab, but I'm not going to be there right away.
Oh, that's fine. I'll go when you go.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know when that class starts. Maybe 12:30, something like that. I can check quickly.
12:30.
Thank you.
We'll go to the lab room at 12:30.
Yeah, 3:35.
Okay.
Before.
Before, like 12:20.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I registered for this class, mm-hmm. and for the whole summer, I've been looking over
nice.
As I'm registered, and all of a sudden, it tells me that I'm not registered in it. And the same thing happened to my, previous class in sociology.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, he let me get into the class, fortunately, but I don't know why it says that I'm not registered in it.
Yeah, you got to find out why so it never happens to you again.
I know, but if
you got to find out why from administration and records.
Okay.
I can double check to see if that's really true. Sometimes maybe you misread something on a cell phone, but you're on my roster.
I know, I checked my gateway before I came here, and it said DN on it, not RW, and it was saying RW for...
I don't know what DN, I don't know
what
the code for
it. Oh, it means you dropped it without a W or something like that. And I never dropped it.
Yeah. Got to talk with somebody in administration and records. I wouldn't be able to track why it happened. But the only thing I can say, I didn't drop you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can ask me a question, but I'm going to start cleaning up in here because there's another class.
Can we sign in and run the wait list?
You certainly can. Yeah. That sign-in sheet is a little loose today because I forgot to pass it around in time. Oh, yeah, if you were signed up for it.
So it's fine. If I just saw the case, we can go for it this morning.
Or this afternoon.